Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Chester Elton. He's a national speaker and best-selling author of 9 books, but today we're going to be talking about All In, How the Best Managers Create a Culture of Belief and Drive Big Results. The one, the only, Chester Elton. Chester, thank you for being on the show today.
It's always a delight. Thanks for calling.
You know, it's interesting. People talk about cultures, and they mean so many different things to different people. But when you're talking about a workplace culture, what do you really define as what a culture really is in the workplace?
Well, you know, what we talk about is we talk about highly engaged and productive culture. And the way we define that is a place where people believe what they do matters and they make a difference. And then we add to that, and when they make a difference, it's noticed and celebrated. You know, because culture is kind of this amorphous thing, like what is a culture, right? So I always like to say it's like buying a house. You know, when you go to buy a house, you've got all your criteria and neighborhoods you want to be in, schools and so on. And then the realtor takes you to 50 places. But if you've had the experience that we've had as a family, is all of a sudden you walk into the house, right? Just feels right. There's an emotional attachment. You may not even have all the things on your list checked off, but it just feels right. And so as we try to define workplace culture, we give it that definition of, you know, meaningful work and making a difference and being celebrated. But there's also that emotional connection that I feel good about where I work. I feel good about the people I work for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. I mean, look, there is a gut reaction to when you're hiring somebody. You just know it's the right person. There's a gut reaction when you're doing something and it just feels right. And I think when you're at work, look, you're at work sometimes more than your home, right? You're with the people there, you're with the organization there, sometimes more than you see your spouse or your children. So it just has to be right for you to be able to feel like it's a great place to be.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Well said.
So when you're talking to audiences, and by the way, the audience does need to know that I saw Chester up at the main HR convention here at the Samerset. He did a great job. So, you know, just a little kudos to you. You do a great job speaking, great storytelling, and I know you're going to share some stories today. You talked a lot about culture. You talked a lot about that differentiator in the business world. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing from your research, what you're seeing from talking across the country.
Well, here's the, when we say it's a great differentiator, I'm such a firm believer in that, you know, with the way business changes so quickly, you know, the velocity of change and information and so on, that your competitors can very quickly and very easily replicate your products, your pricing, your locations, your commission structure, you name it. But the hardest thing to replicate is the culture. You know, and that comes down to your people and their engagement levels, their empowerment and their energy around, you know, your what we call noble cause, your mission and vision. So to me, if you're looking for differentiators, it's not going to be technology, right? Because technology can be replicated, you know, in a matter of minutes, it seems like. But the way your people interact with each other and the customers creates a really interesting culture. And, you know, when you look for examples of that, I mean, look no further than Southwest Airlines, right? Where you've got the same planes, the same fuel, the same regulations, the same airports, and yet flying Southwest is a remarkably different experience than flying most other airlines. The differentiator there is the culture. Is it a huge advantage? Absolutely it is.
Well, I think companies sometimes underestimate the power of culture. They talk a lot about it. They think about it. They think it just happens, but it doesn't really just happen, does it?
No. You know, we've got a great saying that says, if you don't create the culture you want, a culture will create itself, and it's probably not the one you want, right? So to your point, a lot of companies will talk about culture. They'll have the big banners and the billboards and the mission, vision statements and all that. But it's how you act every day that really builds the culture. And you have to You have to find time for it, and you have to make it a priority. Because if you don't, little subcultures will bubble up, and you know, 99 times out of 100, they're not the cultures you want.
This has to start at the top, though, doesn't it? I mean, I know I've heard you talk about it, but the reality is it is a trickle-down effect. I mean, that's the only way you're going to ensure that senior leadership, C-suite, really buys in, understands it, and makes it a priority.
You're right. You know, I have people come to me all the time. We'll speak, like, you know, we were up at the main HR conference, and they'll say, you've got to come talk to my company. The culture is toxic. The CEO doesn't get it. You've got to go talk to him. I said, I will never talk to your CEO, because your CEO doesn't believe it's a priority, and there's no way he's going to call me in and say, hey, you know, fix this rotten culture I have developed. Now, there is somewhat of an exception when we talk about that, in that in your work team, in your small part of the world, you can create your own subculture there, you know, and whether it's an extension of the greater great culture, or where you've tried to carve out a little oasis in what otherwise might not be the best of cultures, you can do that. But to your point, if you want to have the big impact, you really have to get the top guys to buy in. And whenever we do our training and consulting and so on, the very first people we meet with are obviously the top leaders. If they don't get it and don't model the right behaviors, the chances of other people stepping up is, you know, slim and none.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty about how a organization either, you know, adopts a culture, changes a culture, ferments a culture, creates a culture, all those things, before we get into it as the show progresses, do you have a story or something that you could tell about a success story of an organization that, you know, you really think lives it, breathes it, and people can relate to?
Oh, sure. You know, we do a lot of work with American Express, and I know for the most part banks, you know, don't have the most positive of images, you know, due to the meltdown and all that. But I will tell you that Ken Chenault, who's the CEO there, is everything you'd want in a CEO. You know, smart, engaged, you know, great experience and so on, but very much a man of principle. He's got a great heart, and you see it in the products and services that they supply. Well, one of the areas of American Express that we focused on, and we had a chance to do some nice work with, was one of their call centers down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, run by an amazing leader named Doria Camaraza. And, you know, when you think of call centers, so I say call center, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Oh, dingy, dark place with people on headsets that are just crowded in and herded into a small area.
Exactly. Turnover, high, low, in between?
Yeah, we'd be high turnover, sure, but running people through, probably, unfortunately, and, you know, some call centers don't have people who are necessarily the cream of the crop. We're talking about, you know, people who have to do that work. I mean, that's what you think of, like it or not.
Yep, very dingy, high turnover, low engagement, burn and churn, right?
Absolutely.
And when you think about the work they do, you know, it's not often in a call center somebody calls up and says, hey, great job, keep it up, love your craft.
Yeah, no one does that, no.
Right. Well, this is a credit card service, and as you might imagine, people call up and say, hey, my card didn't go through, or I missed a payment, or I've lost my card, or whatever. Well, they have created one of the most remarkable cultures down there. It's just a big gray building and a corporate office park, you know, nothing spectacular on the outside. But on the inside, you know, people are smiling, high-fiving, they hug each other, and it comes from Doria. She really believes that, you know, the customer experience will never exceed the employee experience. And so she works very hard on making sure that the whole employee experience is extraordinary. They have a daycare center there, they have workout sessions to keep you healthy. They've got a great cafeteria. She will listen in on the calls and then go up and talk to the operators and tell them what a great job they're doing. They have 9% turnover at this call center. Their average tenure is 15 years at a call center.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, how does that translate to business? You know, you go in and they've got all these little celebrations going on there. They've got career pathing for these people and coaching and all. I mean, It's remarkable. So you say, okay, so they've obviously invested a lot of time and leadership and treasure into this place. What do they get for it? Well, they've won the J.D. Power Association Best Credit Card Service Center 7 years in a row. 7 years in a row. So, you know, I hope that the takeaway for your listeners is, well, if you can do it at a call center, you can do it anywhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, we'll talk to some people say, well, Zappos or whatever, that's crazy, you could never do that. Credit card call center in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Look, if American Express can do it, you can do it. And follows all the principles and stuff that our research tells us is important. You know, the way you create a vision, the way you get people engaged and enabled and energized, that when they do something right, you make sure you notice it and celebrate it with open communication. And I mean, it's a great success story. Nobody does it better than those guys.
No, that's awesome, because you don't hear about that, especially in the call center era. Today, we're, of course, talking with Chest Elton of The Culture Works. He's a best-selling author of All In, a new book, I believe, that's out there, The Carrot Principle, The Orange Revolution. You're an author extraordinaire, aren't you?
Well, you know, I've got a great writing partner, Adrian Gostick, who's beyond brilliant. And, yeah, we've written 9 books together. In fact, we have a new book coming out end of September. You can pre-order on Amazon. It's called What Motivates Me? Put Your Passions to Work. And we're very proud of that book as well.
Well, good. Well, certainly at the end of the show, I'd love you to tell me a little bit more about that book and what's going on with that. In terms of the culture itself, and you've talked about a success story in American Express, and certainly having anything to do with a call center and making it a place with 9% turnover is pretty darn impressive. What are some of the, you know, at 30,000 feet, what are some of the key points that an organization has to look at? And then when we come back from the break and so forth, we'll talk more about it. What are the key points that an organization has to look at to make a culture shift, to make a culture stay, and to make it happen?
Well, you know, what we developed in All In from, you know, 300,000 surveys and studying lots of really successful and engaging cultures was we developed a roadmap. And I think that's really important. And whenever you're writing or doing research, is the knowledge transferable? You know, give me a plan, give me some steps to go forward. And at the core of that is what we call E plus E plus E, that you have to engage your workforce, you need to enable them, and you need to energize them. You know, for a long time, we thought engagement was the holy grail. Just get them engaged and it solves all your problems. Well, one of the aha's we had from the research is if you don't enable those engaged employees and you don't give them an emotional connection, a purpose above and beyond what their day-to-day tasks are, you're going to leave a lot of productivity on the table. And what we found was engaged cultures that added enablement and energy literally doubled the operating margin. The operating margin output doubled. So the productivity is great. So, you know, we start at the core, and that's where I think if you're going to build a great culture, you've got to start with those three E's, and it is all focused on your individual employee.
And you talk about this roadmap being 7 steps. What are the 7 steps? And then we'll be going right to break.
Sure. Well, the first step is what we call the burning platform. You know, and sometimes we call that the noble cause. What's the why of work? Not just what you do and how you do it, but why do you do it? And then step 2 is this customer focus. You know, are you listening to your customers? Are you engaging them? Are you talking to them about what they value most? And then, you know, as you go around the wheel, it's this idea of agility. We talked about the speed of business and change. Are you listening to your customers and your employees? And are you making the necessary changes to keep your business vibrant and relevant? Step 4 is sharing everything. We found that these high-productive cultures were very communicative, you know, that very transparent. They shared what they could, and they shared often. Step 5 is partnering with your talent. You know, one of the big disengagers for employees can be, I've got nowhere to grow. You know, lay out for me what my opportunities are. Do they treat your business as if they're owners? Step 6 is my favorite from our work we did at the Carrot Principle, but that they root for each other. There's a culture of celebration. When I do something right, it's noticed and celebrated. And then step 7 is this idea of clear accountability. And we can talk about that. In a lot of organizations, accountability is almost seen as a negative thing. I'm going to hold you accountable for that. Well, there's lots of ways to hold people accountable in a very positive way, in a way that makes them feel like they're rooting for each other and cheering for each other. So those are the 7 steps. Kind of funny.
Well, no, I mean, I think to your point at the end, I think accountability works both ways. I think people like to know what they're expected to do, and they like to be able to make that happen. They're probably not, they don't like when accountability is either in their mind unattainable or in their mind, you know, being forced upon them. But if they have buy-in, they can make huge strides in that area.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. And that comes back to that sharing everything in clear communication. You know, what are the expectations? And do I know exactly what is expected of me? And give me a pathway to get there.
We're talking with Chester Elton of The Culture Works. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're going to break, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're having a talk with a national speaker, Chester Elton of The Culture Works. He's an author of many books. Seven books, right? Is that correct there, Chester? I want to make sure I get the right number here. Seven books?
Actually, it's nine.
Nine books. See, there's so many, I can't even keep track now.
Yeah, there's a lot. And you know, we've sold 1.3 million copies, and they've been translated into 30 languages. So we've been very lucky that our work has been very well received.
Well, there's a reason for that, because it makes sense. And that's the key. I say keep it simple and it makes sense, and you will not only sell, but you'll make a big difference in someone's life. Isn't that true?
You know, you're exactly right. In fact, The Culture Works, that's kind of our motto, is make a difference. You know, it's fun to come in and write great books and go speak at conferences, but the key is, did you make a difference? Did somebody have a great takeaway that made their team, you know, a little more engaged and a little better place to work? And that's where our passions lie.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking about your new book, All In, How the Best Managers Create a Culture of Belief and Drive Big Results. And we before we went to break, we talked a little about what you called the three E's. And so could you break that down a little bit more for us? Talk a little bit about what it takes to get all three E's aligned.
Sure. Well, you know, we talked about engagement, how that used to be kind of the holy grail. And engagement basically says, like, I'm an employee that'll give you my discretionary effort. You know, I'll come in a little early, I'll stay a little late, and so on. I believe in our cause. But again, what we found was those engaged employees can become very disengaged and very frustrated if they're not enabled, or some of our clients have said empowered, to do their work, you know, be able to make decisions and get things done. And then energize them around the why of work, you know. And I believe any work has nobility attached to it, you know. I did some really fun work with the Hard Rock Cafe a while ago. And what I loved about the Hard Rock Cafe is they said, look, we don't look at people as just hungry, right? We believe there's a little bit of rock star in everybody. And so when you come to the Hard Rock, we're going to rock with you. And I thought, isn't that interesting? You know, when you look at people as rock stars and creating a great memory around a good meal, your attitude on what you do and how you engage them and how you create that is much different than get them and get them out, you know, feed them and leave them kind of thing. And you find that in a lot of businesses that have found a way to capture some ability and that energy, you know, Zappos, we don't ship shoes, we ship happiness. You treat those boxes differently if you think there's happiness inside instead of just another pair of shoes. So that really is the foundation. Do I have the tools to do my job? You know, am I energized around what our company stands for and the why of work? And if that is a foundation, then the other seven steps make a lot more sense.
You know, if I could just ask a question having to do with your thought on this, having to do with when you're hiring somebody for an organization, How do you try to address up front this three E's? How do you see if they're going to fit within to what you think will be the culture or should be the culture of your organization? Is it critical to think at that point, hey, will this person fit our organization as much as the vice versa?
Oh, sure. And you look at some of the best hiring practices for organizations where, you know, there's an extensive interview process, there's some mentoring, you know, you meet not just the boss, but you meet the team. And those organizations tend to have a much higher retention rate and more productivity. You know, the old saying, hire slow, fire fast. And it's interesting that you bring that up. Is it a good fit? We talked briefly about our new book coming out in the fall about what motivates me. We've actually put together, and that was what we had in mind, when you create these great cultures, is you've got to have the right fit. You know, do the passions line up? Do your strengths line up and so on? I mean, is what we're doing going to align with what motivates you? And sometimes, you know, our greatest strengths aren't the things that motivate us. We're really good at it, but what we're really passionate about is whatever. So we actually developed a little assessment at the back of the book that you can take, and we've tested it with some of our clients where they do use it as a qualifier and say, hey, look, it's 100 questions. You take it for basically 20 minutes, and it'll kind of give us an idea of where your motivators lie. Now, the tricky thing about motivators and when you hire people is motivators change, right? Your
Absolutely.
Motivators now in,
yes.
at your stage of life are much different than they were 10 years ago. So it's important to kind of keep checking those because, you know, you get married, you have kids, you're in the middle of your career, the end of your career, your set of motivators are different. But a long answer to a very good question is, are there good ways to qualify people before you hire them? And I think this is where really good probing questions, talking to them about what really motivates them, what really matters to them, and getting them to meet other people on the team and getting to know your company are going to be really, really helpful in making sure you've got the right fit. I love that expression, hire slow, fire fast.
Well, I think that when you're really looking at somebody, no matter how large your organization is, every individual person is a contributor and can make a big difference in rocking the boat, messing it up, or really being part of the team and making it happen. I mean, there's nothing worse than a negative influence on any team or any production facility or any call center. It really doesn't matter. So it really does matter right from the beginning. I've always believed that the hiring correctly and taking that time to do it right, as you said, really does matter.
Oh, there's no question. It was funny. I was doing a conference for SHRM in Alexandria, VA, a few years ago, and had a woman come up to me and talk to me about a toxic employee that they had. But they were also a high producer, and they were worried that if they were to discipline her or fire her, that they would lose customers and it would be a financial burden, you know, to the organization. And she said, "Can you give me some tips?" And I said, "Well, we've only got 30 seconds to talk about this, but let me ask you, do you manage around this person?" I said, "Yes." I said, does the team resent it? I said, "Yes. In fact, she treats the rest of the team badly." I said, "Okay, how long have you been doing this?" She was about 7 years. I said, "Okay, here's my tip. Go back to the office and fire her today." You know, because here's what happens when you don't solve a toxic employee problem. At first, the rest of your team will blame that person. They blame the toxic employee. But as time goes by, that blame shifts from the employee to the leader because you as a leader can fix that problem and you've chosen not to. So now it's not the employee's fault anymore. It's your fault. And I think that's a very important dynamic to understand. Now, you know, I gave her this advice and thought, who knows what she'll do with it. Literally 2 months later, I got an email, and she said, "I don't know if you remember me, but here's my problem. We went through the process. You know, they weren't mean or about it or anything, but they said, you know, we did. We let her go for all the reasons that we talked about, it being toxic in the workplace, treating other people badly, and so on. And I said, good for you. Let me ask you something. Did you lose any customers? She said, not one. And I said, what happened to the morale of your team? She said, immediately skyrocketed. I said, how's productivity? She says, it's way up. So, you know, long story for your, you know, great insight, and that is when there's somebody that's toxic, you're fair with them. You know, you give them a chance to change, you explain what the idea is, but Boy, if there's not change there, the worst thing you can do is stretch it out. The best thing you can do, take care of that situation as quickly as you can. Be gracious, be kind, but get them out. Give them the opportunity to join somebody else's team. And if they really are a toxic employee, you hope that they'll join your number one competitor.
Maybe hand them an application. You know, I actually did have way back when, I did have a supervisor that used to work, and when he didn't like what somebody did, he would actually take the competitor's application, which, of course, back then was paper, and he would place it in their locker for them. And then the person would come out and go, this application was in my locker. He goes, oh, I see you're filling out an application for the competitor. How unfortunate. Fortunate for us.
Here's
a pen. And so, you know,
and we wish you well.
it is funny, but it does work. All right.
Well, you know, a subtle hint, right? I'll tell you, I used to love all the expressions that we have in the workplace for you're fired, right? It's we're downsizing or we're right-sizing. You know, my favorite one is... we're going to make you available to the marketplace.
Yeah, we're going to empower you by allowing you to interview at every organization other than ours. No problem.
That's right. And we wish you just the best. So, yeah, I mean, it's always a tough subject because, you know, these are people with families and so on. And like I say, you want to be fair. You want to go through due process. But there are times, and I will tell you, in most cases where those situations have happened, it's a relief for the employee, too, because not only are they making everybody else miserable, but chances are they're pretty miserable in that job as well. You're really not doing anybody any favors by keeping them on or prolonging the experience.
You're absolutely right. We're talking with Chester Elton of The Culture Works. We're talking about his book that's new, but it's coming, not the new book that's coming out in the fall, but a new book, All In. And this is talking about some culture in an organization. You know, we just talked a little about the three E's. We kind of talked about what that means. We talked about the seven-step roadmap. You defined what the seven steps were. Could you take a few minutes now and kind of take us through an example, if you could, of how to use these seven steps with an organization?
Sure. Well, you know, most organizations are doing a lot of things right, and they've got a couple of gaps. You know, as we look at the model, we'll sit down with an organization and say, look, where is it that you're really good? You know, they may have a very vibrant and well-communicated mission, you know, Texas Roadhouse, you know, legendary food, legendary service. You've got a lot of buy-in there. So step one around what's your burning platform, what's your noble cause is probably somewhere where they can put a check mark. But rarely do we find an organization that's doing all seven. Really well. And so we'll take them through the key elements, and they'll say things like, we need to find a way to hold people accountable in a more positive way, you know, step seven. Almost universally, there's a need for more praise and recognition. Very few employees feel like they're over-recognized or over-appreciated in the workplace. But the agility one, you know, is one that I think we've done a lot of work with and a lot of play, because it ties into innovation and handling change, and how do you do that with an ever more diverse workforce, not just in age differentiators, you know, with all the different generations working in the workplace, but you've got more and more international employees that come from different backgrounds, different cultures, different ways of doing things. So the idea of being nimble and agile is one where we spend a lot of time. And so that's basically the way we use the roadmap is, you know, what do you do well? Where are the areas of opportunity? Let's share some best practices and some tools to help you become better at holding people accountable or more agile or more of a culture of appreciation.
Do you find that senior leadership looks at their managers to drive this, or do they look at rank and file to really drive this?
Well, you know, the research that I know you're very familiar with is the greatest impact on employee morale and productivity is the immediate supervisor. So to your earlier point, you know, it is the job of top management to make sure that the structure and the mission, vision, and values and all that is in place. But the execution really has to come down to the mid-level managers. And then, you know, as we say in our book, they're not the only ones that own the culture. Everybody owns the culture. You know, when you think about some of the great retail experiences, like in an Apple store, for example. I mean, every employee there is highly engaged, motivated, and knowledgeable. So you mentioned that trickle-down effect. You know, it starts at the top. It's given substance and the day-to-day interaction with the immediate supervisors. But unless it gets down to the rank and file, it's just been an interesting exercise. You know, that's where you absolutely have to get the buy-in, because when the rank and file gets it, that's where the magic really happens with the customer.
Now, look, most people don't leave organizations because of the company. They leave because of the individual they work for. And that is,
exactly.
You know, that is the reality of it. We're talking with Chester Elton of The Culture Works. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back on the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with the national speaker, Chester Elton of The Culture Works. From down in New Jersey. Did I say that right? Jersey.
That's right, buddy. You got a problem with that?
No. Look, nope, I do not.
Good answer.
That is a good answer. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, we've been talking a lot about your new book, All In. And we're really talking about culture in the workplace, how the best managers create a culture of belief and drive big results. We've kind of talked about the roadmap. We've kind of talked about the three E's. You know, Chester, let's be honest. Don't you wish it always worked as simple as it says on paper? Right? I mean...
right.
You know?
Wouldn't it be great if you could just give all your employees a book? Say, read this.
Read this and go do it. Right? Let's be real. Let's talk about some of the challenges organizations face in implementing this. Let's talk about some of the things that you know happen. And maybe you can tell us a story or two about how to overcome them.
Sure. Well, you know, as we talked earlier, it's a daily thing. You've got to make it a priority. If you don't take the time, if you don't find the time to talk about your mission vision, to really reinforce the right behaviors, it's just not going to happen. It's a day-to-day thing. You know, in the book, it's chapter 9, we actually give you 52 ideas, which is sort of like an idea a week kind of thing. Things that you can do, whether it's the team huddle at the beginning of every shift or the wrap-up at the end of the day that says, hey, this is a good day. Here's what we did. Here are maybe some things we can improve on. You know, Avis Budget has a great best practice, and it's this. They send out a blast email literally every morning to every location in the Avis world with a great customer service story. I love that best practice. You know, so often we start the day with everything that went wrong the day before. And instead of doing that, they say, look, at Avis, we try harder. It's all about customer service. And they tell a story. Here's what they did in London. Here's what they did in Mobile, Alabama. Here's what they did in Montreal, Canada. And the message is, look, this is what we do. This is how we deliver that great customer service. I think it's a great tool. It's a great message. It enables managers to start meetings on a very positive note that tied to their vision and values and to their slogan, we try harder. This is how we're going to try harder today. And the message that they want to come through is, and by the way, when you do these kinds of things, we'll tell your story too. It's a great best practice.
When you're talking to organizations and they're saying, well, okay, we're going to start doing this, people are going to like maybe not believe it at first, right? Because this is completely out of character for what we've done in the past. And yeah, the CEO said that we were going to do this, but he always says we're going to do something new. Things change all the time around here. How do organizations get employees, management, to believe?
Well, it comes over time. You've got to be consistent. If you do it once and you never do it again, yeah, people aren't going to believe you if you're inconsistent in that delivery. But, you know, Avis Budget, it's every day, right? We do it every day. Well, once you start doing it every day, then that kind of consistency, that kind of regularity builds a tradition. And traditions by nature are built over time, right? Over time, I start to believe it. So yeah, that idea of saying it and then doing it and then continuing to do it and being consistent, that's the key.
That is the key. And isn't that the key to life, really, in terms of...
Yeah, whether it's your kids or your marriage, right?
That's
consistency
right.
Goes a long way.
It does. I mean, they get to know what you really want, what you really need, and that's communication in a nutshell, right? At the end of the day, it is about people understanding what is expected of them and held accountable to it, but they hold themselves more accountable to it if you really set the expectation the right way.
Exactly right.
So when you're working with an organization and you've taken them through this progress, you've taken them through the program, they've set up the program, tell me about the follow-up steps. Tell me about how you go back and look at this 6 months, year later. How do you do that?
Sure. Well, there's all kinds of tools that enable you to do that. In fact, we even have what we call the cultural snapshot, where when we start to work with an organization, we come in, it's a very simple tool, and we give you your ratings on engagement, enablement, and energy. And then we go through the workshops, the counseling, we give them the tools, we set up that consistency, that accountability we talked about. And then a year later, we come back and we take the survey again. I mean, you know, the great thing about data is it tells you a lot about your organization, and as long as they trust you and you keep it anonymous, which is always very important, those numbers can tell you a lot. And, you know, we're obviously not the only ones that do this. There's all kinds of climate surveys and Towers Watson and Gallup and the Q12 and so on that are very enlightening and engaging when it comes to telling you the health of your organization. So I think when that's a way of keeping people accountable. When you do the survey, you share the survey results with your people, you give them the tools and the wherewithal to improve, you explain them what the benefits are going to be, and then you check back in, how are we doing, is very empowering and very important.
So you've created this book All In. You're talking about culture out there. Tell me how it fits in with all the other leadership books, the Carrot Principle, the Orange Revolution, the Daily Carrot Principle, all these different areas that you've come together. Tell me how they all build upon one another to get to the point today.
Well, you know, really a great question. We started with reward and recognition because it was something we were very passionate about, and we wrote several books on that. It led us to teamwork because we found there were some really interesting dynamics around teams, how they can change an organization and how innovative teams really were cutting edge in a lot of organizations. And as we started to then, teach and consult around that, most often, it was really an interesting experience, as we talked to leaders in an organization, they'd say, recognition, yep, got to have it, nobody gets enough. Teamwork, got to collaborate, got to break down silos, okay. But if we don't get the culture right, it doesn't matter. And I thought that we kept hearing that over and over again. But if we don't get the culture right, and you think about it, if you've got a toxic culture, and all of a sudden the managers, to your point, start passing out all this recognition and everything, it gives people whiplash. You know, it's a mental whiplash. Like, what? You know, do they really mean it? Or have they just brought in another leadership guru, right, that said you got to say thank you more often? So this idea of what makes a great culture became very interesting to us. And again, with the great data and resources at Towers Watson, they allowed us to take a look at that data, and we were able to build a roadmap where clearly teamwork, you know, sharing everything, partnering with your talent, and rooting for each other, that foundation of recognition, made all the sense in the world. They were all elements, but it was in a bigger picture. And we found that when your culture works, everything else, you know, works much better. It's in fact why we named our company The Culture Works.
You know, I was on your website, and by the way, people can go there at Chester Elton, that's CHESTERELTON.com. You have a blog that you put out each and every, I'm going to say every week or every couple weeks. This one was written in June of 2014. It's called How to PBJ Your Way to Efficiency. And it talks about yeah. Yahoo's new CEO, who you spoke about. Tell me a little bit about that and how that plays into this whole culture revolution that you're trying to create.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting. Those are the radio interviews that we do with business radio here in New York. Our main website is actually theCultureWorks.com, where you can have access to all those as well. And I am an influencer on LinkedIn. We publish regularly there, too, if you're looking for some interesting articles and the way to create a conversation around them. But yeah, the PBJ was, you know, you gotta come up with new ideas. We want to break down, you know, the politics, the jams, the silos and so on. And so literally what she created said, look, on a regular basis, we want you to tell us how to be more nimble and streamline the process, and we're going to serve PBJs. You know, I'm always amazed that when you offer free food, how many people show up, you know?
That's true.
Who doesn't like a PBJ, right? PBJ and a glass of milk. It creates great conversation. So, yeah, that was the story there. And I love it when leaders do things like that and they make it fun and engaging and simple. You know, hey, over a PBJ, we're going to talk about how to be more efficient. And you know, one of the things that they talked about is that they had to swipe their security pass three times to get into the building. You know, once in the parking lot, once at the main gate, and then once at the reception. They said, well, that's just ridiculous, and it's annoying. So they figured out how to make it just one swipe. You know, the first swipe counts. And it may seem like a little thing, but you know, when your bosses and your company are worried about little things and how to make your life better, you tend to give back.
You wrote this book with Adrian Gostick.
Yes.
Who is he? What's he all about?
Adrian Gostick is an incredibly smart and gifted writer, and he and I are a great tandem. Adrian got his master's degree from Seton Hall University here in New Jersey. My son just graduated, actually, in economics. And Adrian and I, together, we've found a wonderful way to collaborate in how to take volumes of data, bring it down into very simple, digestible chunks, and then create those transferable models. And that has kind of been our life's calling, to create better workplaces and create models that are easily transferable. But Adrian... It doesn't get any better than Adrian. He's brilliant, and he and I have become great and close friends.
No, that's great. And, of course, we're talking with Chester Elton, and we're talking about the book, All In, How the Best Managers Create a Culture of Belief and Drive Big Results. And that's the part I want to ask you about now, and that's the results part. Because at the end of the day, organizations are only going to do this if they understand there's an ROI. The CFO is only going to pay for it if there's an ROI at the end of the day. What are some of the results you're seeing?
Well, you know, we talked about the operating margins. It's no mystery, and there's not just our researcher, Towers Watson, but lots of places where if you are a preferred employer, if you're a best place to work, you'll get 2 to 3 times more applications for work. Your talent pool is bigger. Best places to work tend to retain employees more. I mean, take a look at the call center down in Florida with the average tenure of 15 years. I mean, you can look at all those as data points for savings and incremental gains. You know, we talked about the three E's where operating margin doubled when you added enablement and energy. So these are just, you know, cold hard facts. You can choose to ignore them, but at your own peril, you know, creating great places to work, engaging your employees, treating them well, getting them a career path, that will always come back. Now, having said all that, you've got to have a product people want, you know, priced fairly with good distribution. It's not like you can take something that's worthless and create a great culture around it and create a business. All those pieces have to come together. But as we stated at the beginning, I think culture is the big differentiator and can take your product and make it stand out if you do all the things we talked about and get your people all in.
We're talking with Chester Elton of The Culture Works. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. Sheehan Finney Bass and Green, innovative approaches and practical solutions. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. And today we've had the great pleasure of talking with Chester Elton of The Culture Works, great author, national speaker, just does it all down there in Jersey. It's all good. I know I keep picking on Jersey, but I used to live in New York. I can get away with this. Okay, Chester, I can.
I will not take a cent. However, you should know. I know a guy who knows a guy who can take care of it.
I understand. I know. We all know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. Come on.
Right.
That's funny. So, you know, I think it would be great to tell the audience a little bit about your history, how you got to this point, how you know about these things, and how you have decided to bring this culture work forward.
Yeah. You know, again, thanks for the question. I grew up in a really interesting family. And I know that's going way back, but, you know, I had parents and four older brothers that really did. We really cheered for each other. We were very supportive. My father was, you know, my first great mentor and a great friend. And he had a way of just treating people incredibly well. He ran radio station and did a great job there. People loved working for him. And that was kind of the model. And so when I got into working and I grew up in sales, you know, I thought, well, when people do a great job, if it's noticed and celebrated, they're more likely to do it again. So wouldn't it be fun to eventually get into a business like that? And so I worked in the recognition industry for 19 years, you know, and that's where I met Adrian. He joined our company there, and we worked together for 11 years. And that's when we started to write books. Because it seemed to me that if you could become the thought leader, that it was a lot easier to get business, right? People would come to you for your advice, and our business had all kinds of customers and data, and so we started to mine that. We started to write the carrot books, and that led us to the Orange Revolution. And then about 4 years ago, we struck out on our own. We wanted to own our work. We wanted to not just give speeches, but really get involved. Really get involved in making a difference at companies with coaching and so on. And so that's our background, what led us to where we are today.
No, it's great. And it's a great story. I mean, you've really worked your way through a lot of trials in terms of making this work out there, seeing what does work, what doesn't work. You know, you get a lot of press in terms of you get to speak out there, out on the road, and also on the radio. I know you do interviews on Fox, and you do interviews for other CBS stations. Tell me a little about how you got into all this speaking on top of, obviously, the books.
Well, you know, I would love it when people ask me that question, because we wrote our first book, and it was called Managing with Carrots. And we were very excited about it. And it was basically, you know, case studies of some of the companies we'd worked with that had done recognition really well. Well, then what happens is people, like, if you're lucky, people buy your book. And they call and say, hey, read your book. Of course you speak on your books, don't you? And we'd say, well, of course.
Yeah.
They would invite us to come speak at a leadership conference or whatever. And we'd say, great. And then we'd speak, and we would watch other speakers and pick up best practices, you know. And then we'd speak, and then people would say, gee, we really love this speech. Of course, you have training around this, don't you? And we'd say, Of course we do. and so we hooked up with some of the great training companies and got some advice from the Franklin Coveys and people like that. And, you know, and necessity is the mother of invention, right? And so we started to do that. And we took a look and had great fun doing that. And then, of course, assessment came as a part of that and, you know, our cultural snapshots and so on. So it's really been nice that it's been pulled through. And it's been a wonderful journey. We get to speak all over the world, meet interesting people everywhere we go. I just got back from Lagos, Nigeria, which was a singularly unique experience and just great fun.
No, that's awesome. And I want to really thank you for taking the time today, Justin, to come on the phone. Where can people go and see the website one more time?
You bet. It's thecultureworks.com. There's all kinds of free downloads that tell you all about our practice. There's some nice white papers there. I'm an influencer on LinkedIn. I love the conversations on LinkedIn. In fact, we launched All In at the LinkedIn headquarters out in California. It was great fun. We have a regular spot on CBS Radio here in New York, and like you say, we appear fairly regularly on some of the Fox Business News channels as well. But in closing, I'd be remiss if I didn't jump out and say, we've got a new book coming out September 30th. You can pre-order it on Amazon right now. It's called What Motivates Me? Put Your Passions to Work. We're very excited about that book, too.
Well, I encourage everyone to go to Amazon and make that happen. Go to the website, click it. Of course, go to hrpowerhour.com right after the show, and we will have all the information for you to click and link on to take you directly to Chester's organization and make it happen for your organization and make the culture right. Chester, thank you very much for being a guest today on the HR Power Hour.
Oh, listen, it's been a real pleasure. You're really easy to talk to. This was great fun.
Awesome. Well, you have a wonderful day, and everybody, stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week on News Talk WLOB, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group, licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. What is the purpose of a job description? According to Bridget Miller on HRDailyAdvisor.com, job descriptions are not just a nice to have. They serve several important purposes for employers, the employee, and the applicant. Here's some that you can think about. Do you keep yours up to date? If you don't, they don't stay relevant. If you don't keep them up to date, how do people know what you really expect of them? If you don't tell them what that is, if you don't show them, it's again hard to then say how to performance review them because you're not reviewing them on what you told them you'd be doing. So these are really straightforward reasons as to why job descriptions are critical, and that is the purpose of the job description today. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a special show. It's special because it's our two-year anniversary of doing the HR Power Hour. My producer, Debbie Davis, has provided some amazing and fun-filled clips of the last year in review. And yes, once again, as we did with our first season, she's also caught some, well, as we like to call them, blooper moments of your host, yours truly, sometimes saying, well, things that just come out of my mouth. But she's taped them, and we're ready to air them. So enjoy the second anniversary show on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.